Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Chapter 32. Out of the Fire.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real weird sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the weird sisters, we're the real weird sisters. All you other weird sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real weird sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Alice.
And I'm Martha.
And today we're here to talk about Chapter 32 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Martha, I don't need the hospital wing. I don't. I just want...
I'm fine, sir. I just fell asleep. I had a nightmare.
Oh, the pressure of examinations.
The pressure of examinations, my boy. It happens, young man. It happens.
Well, if you couldn't tell, that was Martha and I reenacting the beginning of this chapter. It was very well done, though.
Yeah,
so I'm
well,
sure
we did
could.
A great job at keeping track of who was who in the dialogue.
That's true, too. So, how's it going this week, Martha? Did you enjoy the chapter?
It's going well, Alice. I did enjoy the chapter. It's very exciting. Last week was definitely an exciting one as well, and I definitely was ready to get into this one. After reading last week's chapter, so I'm definitely excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I think all of the ones in, like, from here practically till the end, or at least till they get back from the ministry, it's like cliffhanger after cliffhanger,
right,
at the end of these chapters.
Definitely, and then even leading up to the Lost Prophecy, which is one of the all-time best Harry Potter chapters ever, so I'm very excited for being towards the home stretch of this book.
Yeah, we are really in the home stretch here. We only have a few more chapters with Sirius left.
So. R.I.P.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, not quite yet.
But it's just 7 left of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Alice. Can you believe it?
It's crazy. 7, in 7 short weeks, we'll be back here talking to Shut Up Tim.
Oh, yes. Can't wait. Yeah, mark your calendars, folks. November.
You don't want to miss that. You'll never hear from him again.
Yeah, this is going to be his last chance, actually.
Yeah, we'll see if he can redeem himself to be able to actually be on the next movie cast.
Spoiler alert, he won't.
All right, well, Martha, let's go ahead and let's think happier thoughts. Let's talk about the actual chapter.
Oh, yes, it's a very happy chapter. It's not stressful, not, like, heart-wrenching, not, like, terrifying. It's just really relaxing and happy.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking as well. I will say this whole chapter is very well written, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is.
It's immediately coming out of this vision that Harry's had, and you can just feel the sort of, he's kind of in shock, honestly. Like,
yes.
He's just, his reaction, he can't really think straight.
Yeah, that's totally right. And I think that J.K. Rowling, like we said, she writes tragedy super well. She also writes high-pressure scenes like this, high-pressure chapters like this. I mean, Harry is just, like, completely in his head, he's kind of lost it, because, I mean, this is such a crazy thing to witness in your head, and then to come out of it into this equally, or not equally, but, you know, very stressful environment as well in terms of the examination environment. So, I mean, I think that she just does a great job of getting into his psyche here and, like, getting really into, you know, what his thought process is as he's going through the motions, trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it looks like Professor Toffee has taken Harry out into the hallway, or out into the entrance hall, and he's trying to convince Harry to either go to the hospital wing, or, like, he's thinking maybe he needs to go back in and complete his exam, and Harry's, like, the last thing that he wants to do right now is try to finish up his OWL.
Right, definitely. He says that he agrees wildly to go back in and finish his paper, and he's like, oh, wait, I mean, I've done as much as I can. yeah, this is such a frantic chapter, and I love how fast-paced it all is.
Yeah. Professor Toffee, of course, he's... He's quite sweet.
He's our king, yes. He's like, oh, it happens, young man. Very well. I shall go and collect your examination paper. I kind of have lost the whatever Tofty voice I did last week was.
I enjoyed that, though.
You know, I think of Professor Tofty, I meant to say this last week, as Professor Lofty Toffee.
Is that supposed to be a joke?
He's like lofty and he's toffee.
How is he lofty?
He's kind of just got like a lofty persona, but like in a cute way.
Okay, everyone, this is probably about the point in time where we need to give a disclaimer that we are recording this at nighttime.
Yes, and I'm very tired.
I think Martha is lofty toffee right
now. I'm kind of lofty toffee too.
This might be a silly one, just based on your tone.
It's actually only like 6 o'clock in the evening, but it's been a long day.
Yeah, it's literally 6:53, so...
It's more like 7.
This is Martha staying up late.
Yeah, I should have been in bed a while ago.
Okay, well, yeah, so like I said, though, Professor Toffee... I mean, Tofty.
Professor Lofty Toffee. Or Toffee Lofty, whichever you prefer.
So... Harry does finally free himself from Professor Lofty Toffee, and he...
Goodbye, Lofty Toffee, we miss you already.
He heads straight up to the hospital wing, where his plan, I think, is to try to talk to Professor McGonagall.
Yes, that is his plan. I did want to note that the analogy that J.K. Rowling uses here is he bursts through the double doors like a hurricane. This is the point in Harry Potter where Harry sings, "In the eye of a hurricane, there is quiet."
I feel like that reference might go over some people's heads, and...
Oh, everybody knows Hamilton at this point. If you don't, I'm sorry.
I don't think Harry's quite to the eye of the hurricane yet.
He is the hurricane.
Yeah, he is the hurricane.
Yeah, true.
But he sees, first when he comes into the hospital wing, he sees Madame Pomfrey, she's... spooning bright blue liquid into Montague's open mouth.
Yum, sounds good. And I love, she shrieks with alarm.
She's feeding him antifreeze.
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like. Or like coolant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harry like tells Pomfrey that he's there to look for McGonagall, and Madame Pomfrey just gets really sad. She's like, "She's not here, Potter. She was transferred to St. Mungo's this morning. 4 stunning spells straight to the chest at her age. It's a wonder that they didn't kill her."
Oh, I mean, and it is horrible. Like, I just, like, reading this the first time, it's just like a knife to the heart thinking about, like, just the fear that sets in on Harry of, like, the fact that McGonagall isn't there either. Like, he feels like he doesn't have anyone he can go to find out or to get further information about the order.
Yeah, I love when it gets into Harry's head here. Like I said, J.K. Rowling does this constantly throughout this chapter, especially where Harry is like, his reaction to McGonagall not being there. It says that he had always expected Professor McGonagall to be there. Maybe not exactly the person he always wants to see, but like she's always dependably, solidly present. That's the word that he uses for her, and that's, I mean, she is that like stalwart presence in his life who's always been there since he entered Hogwarts. And yeah, just to not have her there when Hagrid's already been taken away, when Dumbledore's already been taken away, he can't talk to Sirius. McGonagall was really, like, his last hope in his mind.
Yeah, and, I mean, just the fact that they don't even have... it's too bad that technology goes haywire around Hogwarts. He can't even make a quick phone call.
Yeah.
We know.
He can't use the Felitone.
He does have the mirrors that he should have used, but
he
doesn't think of that.
Very true.
But it's kind of crazy because we have this sort of this paradox of, like, the magical world where it seems like almost anything's possible, but then... once you're out of contact with someone, like, once you're not in the same building with someone, it's so antiquated of how long it takes to get in touch with someone.
True, that's very true. I guess once we invent Patronuses, talking Patronuses, then it becomes a little bit easier to communicate quickly.
Well, let's pretend that they've been invented already, and don't you think that Dumbledore should have, like, somehow told Harry, like, if you need to get a hold of me... the stag will do it, or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that does kind of seem like a cryptic enough Dumbledore message, but Dumbledore doesn't really want Harry to get in touch with him, you know that. Like, he really kind of wants this all to happen, so that
that's true.
It all goes according to the plan. But there is a flaw in the plan, Alice.
Do you know what the flaw was? Can you see it?
The flaw was I cared too much.
I cared too much. Yeah. Well, so that's why Dumbledore couldn't send the stag. Or if you need me, send a stag.
Doesn't he even sound like he would say something like that?
Yeah, it does, but...
Phoenix will always meet stag.
Yeah, Phoenix will always come when stag needs it.
Yeah. Yeah. But Madame Pomfrey, she sort of reads Harry's expression a little bit incorrectly. Like, I mean, I'm sure that it's true that Harry is pretty, like, horrified by what happened to McGonagall, but in this moment he's a little bit more selfishly concerned about her.
Yeah, true.
But Madame Pomfrey, like, it says she has a fierce approval in her face for the fact that he's shocked.
Yeah, she says, if I wasn't worried about what would happen to you students without me, I'd resign in protest.
Oh, that is a good sign of what a wonderful witch she is.
All hail Queen Pomfrey.
Very true.
I'm so lucky that I got Pomfrey and you got Pince in terms of our alter egos.
Why didn't Harry turn to Madame Pince in this situation?
Yeah, she would have been a big help.
Out!
Chocolate in the library!
Yeah. So anyway, Harry then runs out of the hospital wing and he's... It says that the panic is expanding inside himself like panic gas, so he can barely even think what he should be doing. And then he realizes he needs to go find Ron and Hermione again.
Right, and so, I mean, he's pretty lucky he runs into them right after this, and Hermione is, you know, she's super terrified. I do love Hermione in this scene because she is really the voice of reason, even though Harry can't really listen to her. And it's interesting to see her reactions versus Ron's reactions versus Harry's reactions as well.
Yeah, for sure. Hermione definitely is the voice of reason here. And she really goes through just about everything with Harry before they finally, you know, make their plan. But, I mean, she really did try to make Harry see some sense here. And I get why Harry reacted the way he did, because he's just seen the vision. She didn't actually see it. But... I mean, Hermione does make some really good points to him.
Right. Well, and I guess I actually think it's interesting thinking about how... Because Harry uses the example of Mr. Weasley as, like that wasn't... That obviously wasn't just a dream. Like, what would have happened if I hadn't, figured out that it was Mr. Weasley being attacked? And, like, Mr. Weasley probably would have died if I hadn't been witness to it. And I think we've talked about it a little bit, but... We always think about that scene with Nagini and Mr. Weasley as, like, that was Voldemort's mistake, like, allowing Harry in. But it's actually kind of, I wonder, and I don't know if we've talked about this, whether it was kind of part of Voldemort's plan to have this as, like, an example for Harry for, like, why, like, he can trust these visions because look what happened with Mr. Weasley.
Yeah, that's a good theory. I kind of would maybe fall more on the side of, like, this was a mistake, but then Voldemort realized how he could use it to his favor.
Yeah, no, and I think I feel that way more, too, but I do think it's interesting because we always, like,
the
think
Dark
of it.
The Dark Lord does not make
well,
mistakes.
Well, the Dark Lord makes no mistakes. but, yeah, no, I just think it's interesting because, like, that incident actually does kind of help Voldemort here because Harry uses it as, like,
Evidence,
right. And that kind of gets Ron on his side, too, and even Hermione can't really argue about that.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, it is true, like, he's had these visions that have been accurate, so you can see why, then, he believes this one.
Yeah, and so that's why I think this whole book is so interesting, and the whole concept of occlumency and possession and, you know, putting visions into Harry's head, all of those themes are so interesting to unpack, because... I think that, like, the fact that Harry does have those real ones that he witnessed do, like, help back him up when this happens, when the fake vision happens. And then at the same time, like, we don't know which visions that he's had haven't been real. Like, the visions of the Department of Mysteries, I think we've kind of figured out most of those since the Arthur Weasley stuff. Most of those have been implanted by Voldemort, but, like, maybe some of them have been real. It's hard to, like, know those for sure. So I think it's definitely really interesting... thinking about, like, all the visions that Harry's had in the past year.
Yeah, and I do think that you're right. Like, this is one of the major themes of the book, is this idea of, like, what is reality and perception versus reality, and not just with the visions that Voldemort's planting, but also with the way that the ministry is presenting information to the public and through the Daily Prophet and
right, yeah,
and versus how Harry sees reality. And
exactly.
So it's definitely all intertwined, and it really goes well together.
Yeah, and I mean, even not even just the perception and reality thing, but just like how much can we trust our own minds is like a really important theme of this book too.
Yes.
Ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Hermione, I guess her first main argument is that it doesn't make sense that Voldemort would just walk into the Ministry of Magic and
at 5 o'clock on a Friday. Or yeah. I don't know if it's a Friday, but 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Hermione.
Yeah, it's five. They're all out at happy hour, Hermione.
Yeah, if it's Friday especially, that's where they're all gone.
So it's quite plausible after all.
Yeah, but yeah, I love her point. How would Voldemort and Sirius have gotten without being seen? Harry, they're probably the two most wanted wizards in the world.
Yeah, exactly. So she first points that out, then...
I just have to say, this whole scene with Hermione, and I get fired up when people argue, like, oh, Hermione's only in Gryffindor because it's convenient for the books. And we've talked about this on the show before. And I think people might argue for this scene, yeah, Hermione, look at her being this logical, like, look at the facts, Harry, kind of person. That shows a Ravenclaw side. But the fact that she's standing up to Harry here, I think really does show that courage that she has. And, like, the fact that she is looking out for Harry's, like, best interests here, like, the way that she becomes, like, an equal to Harry in this argument, she really is very brave to stand up and, like... She really does want to, like, make her case, and she has that Gryffindor stubbornness, too, about, like, proving her point.
Yeah, I agree. And then, I mean, once she is able to go through all of her points and figure out, like, that Harry's not going to give up, I mean, she really becomes extremely brave as well.
Yes.
Just the way that she then immediately just dives headfirst into this plan with Harry. And
right.
Yeah. So, a couple of other points that Hermione makes, though, it's kind of, well, like you said, it's kind of interesting to see how Hermione and Ron react differently, because I think Ron initially is just as hesitant as Hermione, but he's very easily persuaded over to Harry's side. Like, he starts coming up with arguments that would back up Harry, like, I've just remembered, Sirius's brother was a Death Eater. Maybe he told Sirius the secret of how to get the weapon?
Yeah, and that's why Dumbledore's been so keen to keep Sirius locked up all the time. I do think this part's really interesting, this tiny shout out to Regulus here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not an accurate theory that Ron presents here, but it actually kind of is a bit of foreshadowing if you, like, read that line a little bit differently, like, that Voldemort told Sirius, or, like, saying that Regulus told Sirius how to get the weapon, implying that Voldemort told Regulus how to get the weapon. And I think that that actually does kind of parallel the story of Regulus and, like, Voldemort in giving Regulus information, and then Regulus not actually using it to the Death Eater's advantage.
Yeah, it is definitely a cool piece of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Here. I mean, obviously he doesn't get the whole thing right.
Right.
He definitely, like...
That's definitely there for us, like, to read on a reread.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, J.K. Rowling definitely put that there because she knew that Regulus was going to be an important character later on, and that this line would be a funny one to read for super fans later on.
Yeah. Ron also has the theory that Sirius might have cracked and just wanted some fresh air.
That's not a bad theory, honestly. I mean, Sirius, like... I know, like, Sirius claims, like, he never would have left Grimmauld Place, or I guess Lupin says that and Dumbledore says that about Sirius, but he hasn't really been proving that, like, his behavior. He just, I mean, and I'm not blaming him too much, because obviously he's the victim here, but, like, Sirius could have been doing a little bit more for himself, or more for Harry throughout the year, not making Harry so worried about what was going to happen to his godfather.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely, like, did not help his case in this matter. But I think you've definitely, throughout the course of this book, you've convinced me more that Sirius was never going to just leave recklessly.
Yeah.
Except for, what, like, when he actually does. But
mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to just break out to get some fresh air, and that was more in Harry's head.
Yeah.
So,
but he doesn't prove to Harry, like,
right, exactly.
He doesn't do anything to, like, contradict Harry's thoughts about that, which I definitely think are accurate.
Right. So, and then Hermione is just, she's, like, because her other main point was she doesn't understand how he would have gotten Sirius out of Grimmauld Place.
Right.
And then Hermione starts saying, okay, well, she, not only, like, logically does this not make sense, but it makes sense that Voldemort might have planted this because he knows Harry and he knows what motivates him. And she first breaks down and says this. She's, like, very hesitant to do so, but she's like, this isn't a criticism, but you do sort of, I mean, don't you think you've got a bit of a saving people thing?
Yeah, Harry glares at her. I think that this whole thing here is interesting, and it makes me annoyed about the whole occlumency thing. Why? I mean, Hermione's so close to getting it, but she doesn't have it, like, completely down. Like, she doesn't really get why Harry had to do occlumency. She gets that it was important to Dumbledore, and she gets that there's a chance that Voldemort might be playing to Harry's emotions, but she can't really get the whole theory out that this is a fake vision. Like, she doesn't say that outright. She just suggests that maybe Voldemort is, like, using Sirius to get to Harry, which is what Harry kind of thinks too. But Harry's like, well, that's gonna work because I need to protect Sirius.
Right. I think Hermione thinks that he's just planted this true vision in Harry's mind, and that Dumbledore just didn't want Harry to see that.
Right.
Because he didn't want Harry to get involved.
Yeah. No, I
versus, like, the fact that he is literally, like, doing baiting him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it does seem more like she thinks that it is a real vision, but, like, it shouldn't be your job to protect it, to do this, Harry. Like, Dumbledore didn't want you to be the one to do this.
Yeah. Although, she does, I mean, with her making them verify that Sirius is safe, that suggests that she has a little bit of an inkling that it could be a fake vision,
but she, that's why I just wish that, like, why couldn't they just say outright, like, Voldemort might do a fake vision of something happening, need to not trust that kind of thing.
That definitely would have helped a lot.
Well, and I guess the plot of this book would have been done, but...
Right. But anyway, so back to the saving people thing. Hermione understands this about Harry in the same way that Voldemort does.
Yes.
And Harry's mad when she first brings it up because she's like, well, remember when you saved all those hostages in the second task? And Harry's like, why was she bringing that up now?
Yeah, how dare she remind him of that blunder now?
So he's like, you think I want to act the hero again? And she's like, no. And it's interesting because I do think, like, it's interesting to consider how Hermione gets this part of Harry that he doesn't really quite understand about himself yet.
Yeah.
And I think throughout the whole series, it'll be interesting to track if he ever really truly, like, understands the saving people thing as a weakness as well as a strength. And I think it's both. It is a strength and a weakness, but I just feel like that's just so much central to his worldview that he doesn't see it as a unique characteristic for himself.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
He just sees it as, like, he just thinks, like, this is how the world is. And he can't see it as, like, a positive or negative attribute. Like, and he's not gonna think he's reacting differently than anybody else would.
Yeah.
But it definitely is more central to his character than he's realizing, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's kind of a metaphor for how I think a lot of people experience growing up. Like, I think that a lot of people, it's like learning empathy or, like, learning how to, like, put yourself in another person's shoes. Because, I mean, and it's kind of, it's not, like, this characteristic that Harry has where he believes, like, oh, everybody's that way. Like, that's not necessarily a bad thing, or it's not, I'm not saying he's, like, super apathetic or something. It's just kind of like when you grow up, you realize, oh, that's actually something that makes me unique, or something that person doesn't have, or I don't share that with this person, or they don't do that quite as much as I do. And I think that that's something that we don't really think about too much until we're at that age, like, that Harry's at right now, or a little older even. Thinking about, like, what makes me unique, and what is my identity, and, like, what makes me different from this person next to me.
Right, and I definitely think that Voldemort planting this vision and manipulating Harry into doing what he does, that's going to show Harry that this can be used as a weakness.
Right.
For sure, he learns that, but he does still have to wait a while to find that as a strength, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too, and actually, this reminds me of something from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which for once in my life, I feel like I've gotten more jaded on Cursed Child ever since, like, in the time since I've read it, but there's one, like, spot in it that's, like, really stuck itself in my memory is when Harry says, like, I would do anything for James, or I'd do anything for Albus, and
Ginny says, well, Harry, you'd do anything for anyone. That's just, like, who you are. And, like, Albus needs to know, like, that you're, like, he's not just anyone to you, even though, like, because you'd do anything for him, that doesn't really set him apart from other people. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting way of looking at this characteristic that Harry has, that he really does want to save everybody and to protect everybody. And we always think of, like, the weakness in that being, like, that it would be at his own detriment, but then it's also, it has that side where it's, like, it can also kind of, like, alienate the ones that you love the most, because, like, then they, like, how do you show them that they are, like, your most meaningful people in your life? And, like, how do you show them that you love them, mm-hmm. When that's the way that you treat everybody, you know? And that's kind of, like, a super jaded way of looking at it, but I think it is really interesting because Harry's character is so this, like, martyr, I've got to save everybody, acting the hero. And there's definitely pluses and negatives to it, but, yeah, there's certain negatives that I don't think about too often, but definitely exist.
Yeah, and definitely in this scene, the negative, obviously, is that he's going to fall for this. Right. And he's going to play right into the trap.
Right.
But, yeah, Hermione points out that Voldemort has already used this against him before. He took Ginny into the chamber to lure mm-hmm. him there, and then he just knows that he's going to come after Sirius as well. So,
right.
And then Hermione's like, well, what if, and she doesn't say, what if it was a vision that Voldemort planted? She says, what if it was just a dream?
Right.
And
Harry roars with frustration.
Then Harry uses his theory about how Voldemort, like, why Dumbledore wanted him to do occlumency. And his theory is he just felt like, he thought that Dumbledore doesn't want him to see real things.
Mm-hmm. Like, that Dumbledore was trying to protect Harry from seeing mm-hmm. traumatic things. Yeah, he's like, why do you think Dumbledore wanted me prevented from seeing these things? Because they're real, Hermione.
Yeah, well, Harry, you didn't quite get that one right on the nose there.
Right. And he's like, and if I remember rightly, you didn't have a problem with my saving people thing when it was you I was saving from the Dementors, or you, when it was your sister I was saving from the Basilisk. Ron, I never said I had a problem. Okay, Ron.
Ron never did say he had a problem. He's more on Harry's side in this whole thing, right. Honestly. But, yeah, so then Harry flies off the handle, and he's just, like, yelling at them about how, like, he needs to, like, pretty much he's just like, okay, I know that I'm gonna go right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, right then, as he's in the middle of his little tantrum, Ginny flies in, Ginny opens the door and comes in.
I just wanted to say, I think it's interesting, we think of this book as the angsty Harry book, like, that he's always yelling in this book, he's always getting really angry. And I think it's interesting to think about, like, the differences in him and his character in this book versus next book, when we have, and then in the Deathly Hallows as well, we can, like, kind of look at it a little bit as the stages of grief a little bit, because this book is definitely anger, we definitely have that, and then, I mean, it's following Cedric's death, he's reacting in an angry way, and the next stage after anger is bargaining, which we do get more with Sirius, but I think that we get to more, like, the depression stage for the sixth book, because he's just, like, so numb after Sirius's death, whereas for Cedric he's just, like, filled with, like, bubbling emotion, like, he just has so much he wants to let out,
mm-hmm.
whereas next book I feel like he's just so, like, you know, low-key and, like, numb to the fact that Sirius is gone, like, and then at the beginning of the seventh book I think we're getting closer to acceptance, and by the end that's kind of where we're at, but I just think it's interesting comparing Harry's reaction to Cedric's death, which we could see this whole book as, and then next book as the reaction to Sirius's death.
Yeah, I agree. It is definitely different ways that he reacts, and it doesn't, I wish it, well, it actually would be pretty cool if it fell, like, a little bit more in right. line with the stages of grief. It's not quite, but I like your parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he definitely has a very different reaction to Cedric than he does to Sirius. And definitely the reactions, I think, are in large part different because of how close he was with each of them. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it was more of a shock and anger thing with Cedric because he wasn't really close with him, but it still obviously was horrible. With Sirius, somebody who was much closer to, he definitely, you know, it's going to be more personally tragic.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I think it also, it's kind of interesting, because, I mean, I think Harry, the more deaths he experiences in his life, which he's going to be, by the end of the seventh book, he's going to have experienced a lot of deaths, which, I mean, even Priori Incantatum shows us just how many tragedies Harry's experienced up to that point, and then he has another 3 years of, you know, the Wizarding War to face. So, it's just, I think the more personal losses that he faces, the more he becomes, like, numbed to it again, but then also a little bit more, like, healthy perspective on it, I want to think, like, at least I hope, that he becomes a little bit more, mature about it, or, like, he can take it in perspective more, or, like, look at the person's life, and, you know, not be angry about it, but instead just, at least, like, understand it a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely, like, learns how to cope with it better, and, you know, another part of the reason he's so angry this whole book is because people are not telling him things.
Right.
He's not, you know, people are not believing him. And
the whole war, the whole world is against him, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally, not just in the sense of I'm a teenager and right. The whole world's against me. So, anyhow, back to Ginny and Luna walking in on Harry doing this whole tantrum. And she's just like, we recognized Harry's voice. What are you yelling about?
Right, Harry, never you mind.
Ginny raises her eyebrows. There's no need to take that tone with me. I was only wondering whether I could help.
Well, you can't. And then Luna, you're being rather rude, you know. And Harry's so rude. It says, Harry swore and turned away.
I know this is a clean podcast, so we won't say the words, but I have trouble coming up with what he exactly would have, what he said that was, like, swearing in this moment. Like, did he swear at Luna?
That's what I'm wondering.
Like, it seems a little bit, I mean, I get that he's upset, but it's just
maybe
weird.
He said, like, shut them up.
That seems pretty harsh.
Well, yeah, but he's angry.
Yeah, it's just, okay, it's kind of hard right now because we, like I said, this is a family show, so we
right.
don't swear on here.
We can't exactly brainstorm.
But I guess
I'm picturing maybe just like a, I don't know, maybe he's not swearing at her, he just, you know, to peek behind the curtain here, when I read this as a fifth grader, I thought that he said, damn, here.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
That's where I'm like, some of those, like, little bit more innocuous swear words, like, they don't really make sense in this context.
Maybe he said, like, maybe frickin' A or something.
Okay, this is so stupid. Like,
this is really stupid.
I hate swearing without actually swearing. It sounds really dumb, but
maybe he said, oh, fudge. Oh, Cornelius Fudge. Yeah. But it's so rude. It says the very last thing he wanted now was a conversation with Luna Lovegood.
Harry.
Why is Harry so rude about Luna? She's really not even that weird.
Well, in a minute she's going to prove otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so Hermione's like, well, they can help. And this is when Hermione has come up with her plan of how they're going to check that Sirius is truly not at Grimmauld Place.
Right.
And, so, and she does say, if this is a trick of Voldemort's, we need to know.
But Sirius is being tortured now!
And she's kind of, like, really pleading with Harry. She's just desperate that he agree to this. It's kind of, and it goes to show, like, how off the handle Harry must be flying, because she has already then given up all hope of them not leaving Hogwarts.
Right.
Like,
yes.
She knows, like, this is the only way, like, this is the only compromise I'm going to get.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think that kind of shows, like, that she has this, like, she wants to save Sirius, too. Like, and she, Harry hasn't been speaking logically about it. Like, he could have said, like, what, McGonagall's not here, Dumbledore's not here, Hagrid's not here. How are we going to communicate with the Order without us actually going? And she would have thought of Snape at this point, but, I mean, like, she gets it, I think, like, and she's, like, she gets Harry, friendship is so important to her that she really does get Harry, and she's like, well, you know what, we're just gonna have to do this, but we have to check off the boxes first.
Right, exactly. So she comes up with the idea that they're gonna use Umbridge's fire, and that Ginny and Luna will be lookouts. And Luna says, yes, we'll do it. When you say Sirius, are you talking about Stubby Boardman?
Yeah. And then later on, the Department of Mysteries? But how are you going to get there? She's asking all the important questions.
Yeah. I just love how she's back on the Stubby Boardman
thing. I do
thing.
Too.
Yes, we have to
rescue Stubby Boardman.
Well, to be fair, Harry probably would want to save him.
He does have a saving people thing.
Yeah. So they start kind of brainstorming the plan. So first she says that they're going to get Umbridge out of the way by telling her that Peeves is up to something. So Ron volunteers to do that. And then Ginny and Luna are going to be at either end of the corridor in front of Umbridge's office saying that somebody's let off a load of garroting gas.
Right. Which, if people are not familiar with the word garrot, it means to kill someone by strangulation, which kind of makes this whole little plan of Fred and George's a little bit less amusing and a little bit more disturbing.
Right. Fred and George were planning to do that before they left, so...
Right. I'm like, okay, so you were, like, actually going to strangle people?
I think it just knocks them out, but...
Hopefully.
Probably if they don't get immediate treatment.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
So, I mean, Madame Pomfrey's never failed us yet, though.
That's true.
Yeah. So, and then Hermione and Harry are going to have the invisibility cloak to sneak into the office, and she says, we'll sneak into the office and you can talk to Sirius. And Harry's like, he's not there, Hermione. Yeah.
She's like, okay, you can check whether he's there. Thank you.
Yeah. So,
I do think it's a sweet moment here because Hermione says, I'll go with you. Like, I don't think you should be in there alone. And it says, even through his anger and impatience, Harry recognized Hermione's offer to accompany him into Umbridge's office as a sign of solidarity and loyalty.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I do have a good friend in Hermione.
Right, exactly. And I mean, really, she is being a very good friend here. Yes. She definitely, like, has the clearest head about this whole thing.
Definitely.
I mean, Ginny did come up with the garroting gas pretty fast, but yeah. That was just thanks to Fred and George, yeah, too.
What's Ron even going to be doing?
He's going to tell Umbridge that Peeves smashed up the Transfiguration Department.
Or something. Yeah, it's miles away from her office.
Also, I like how there's a whole department for Transfiguration. Yeah. There's one teacher. Maybe that's a British thing.
Yeah. I think it's like a wing.
But there's only ever one class of it going
on
at once.
Yeah, but I think it's like, you know, the big room or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so then Harry finally takes... Well, okay, first of all, Harry's like about to go get his invisibility cloak and he's like, okay, we'll be doing this in 5 minutes. And Hermione's like, right now?
Yeah, it's like, when were you gonna do it, Hermione? But I do love when Harry has to go run back to the dormitories and he meets Seamus and Dean, who hail him jovially and tell him they were planning a dusk till dawn end of exam celebration in the common room.
Oh, Dean and Seamus, ignorance truly is bliss.
Yeah, seriously, those two are so, like, oblivious and they're living the life. Since that they were arguing about how many black market butterbeers they would need.
Yeah, that's a true problem. That's what we like to call a first world problem.
Yes,
around here.
Seriously. Harry, do you want to chip in a couple of galleons? Harold Dingle reckons he could sell us some fire whiskey. Seamus wants fire whiskey.
I like, we did get a second mention here of Harold Dingle.
Harold Dingle, the true future Mundungus Fletcher of Hogwarts.
Yeah, he's like the king of the black market at
Hogwarts. Yeah, yeah. But of course Seamus wants fire whiskey.
Yeah, fire.
Burn the place down.
Just, I hope they don't get any of those candies that make them whistle like a train.
Oh, no, not that one, no! Yeah.
Well, I do fear that Dean and Seamus aren't going to have quite the end of exams.
Who are they celebrating with? Parvati and Lavender and Neville? Mm. Well, no, Neville gets caught along with the rest, so it's just the four of them. And then, like, the sixth and seventh years or something.
Yeah.
Colin Creevy's always down for a party.
Well, you know Harold Dingle's gonna be there.
Yeah. Is he a Gryffindor then?
I think so, yeah.
Must be. He's, like, friends with Cormac McLaggen, probably.
Probably, yeah. So, anyway, Harry just, like, pushes them away and doesn't really react at all. I wonder what they think of him. I mean, I guess they're used to his antics by this point.
It says he was already tearing back along the corridor. He doesn't even answer them.
He has no cool, Harry.
No, he doesn't.
Or no chill.
Yeah, chill out, Harry.
So, anyway, he grabs the invisibility cloak. Now, if only he would have just grabbed the mirror.
Yeah, seriously. No pun intended.
He grabs the invisibility cloak, heads down the stairs, and then they're all getting ready to go. So Ron leaves to go tell Umbridge. Ginny and Luna start doing their little thing with the garroting gas. And I have to say that Ginny's pretty funny here. She's calling out to the crowd that somebody's let off the gas, and somebody, one surly voice. It's not Victor, is it?
I don't think it's
He's usually the surliest one.
You can't be Victor.
I can't see no gas.
That's because it's colorless.
Good grammar, by the way.
Yeah, I can't see no gas. So you can't see some gas.
I can't see no gas.
I can't see no gas. Jilly, that's because it's colorless. But if you want to walk through it, carry on. Then we'll have your body as proof for the next idiot who didn't believe us. See, it does seem like they get killed by it.
Yeah, I know.
They're pretty dark.
At least knocked out, though. But yeah, Ginny's definitely, like, getting into her role here.
Yeah.
I don't really see Luna doing much, but I guess she's on the other end of the corridor.
Well, don't forget the signal, Alice.
Yeah, the signal is a loud chorus of Weasleys are king if they see Umbridge coming.
It cracks me up that Harry doesn't know what the signal is because he was going to get his invisibility cloak, so I love thinking about the conversation that they had while Harry was in the common room getting his invisibility cloak. They're like, what should the signal be? Should we do, like, owl? Ooh, Hermione, you did a great wolf call in the third year. But, oh, let's sing Weasley is our king, and that'll be really innocuous.
Yeah. I wonder who came up with it. Probably Ginny.
Probably Ron. He's like, let's sing about me.
So Harry and Hermione make it into Umbridge's office. They open up the lock with Sirius's knife. And the garish kittens are basking in the late afternoon sunshine that's warming their plates.
Aw, poor little kittens. Why is your master slash mistress so evil?
Yeah, they're being held hostage in her office.
Yeah, in the plates.
But they're happy in their sunlight.
I hope so.
I like how they're described as garish.
Yeah.
So, anyway, then Hermione, first of all, is relieved because she rightly thought that Umbridge might have added extra security after the Nifflers. And nothing has happened to them yet, but that is exactly what Umbridge did. So
yeah.
She saw that coming. It's just unfortunately that it's just unfortunate that Umbridge like was able to come up with something that wouldn't alert them as well.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty smart of Umbridge.
Mm-hmm. So Harry doesn't waste any time. He just throws the flu powder into the flames. He's already done this before, so he knows exactly what to do. And he heads off to a grim old place.
Right, and Creature is there, but the reason that he's there, it's interesting, we see that he looks highly delighted, although he seemed to have recently sustained a nasty injury to both hands, which were heavily bandaged. So we know now that Creature injured Buckbeak and got Sirius to go upstairs so that he wouldn't be by the fire when this happened. So I wonder if Creature's hands are like that because he injured Buckbeak or because he punished himself for injuring Buckbeak.
Or punished himself for his disobedience.
Well, yeah, all of it, yeah.
Yeah, that is a good point. I haven't really thought too much about exactly what happened to him.
Pretty messed up that he injured Buckbeak to get Sirius out of the way.
Yeah, no kidding. Poor Buckbeak.
Yeah.
Poor Beaky. Always cleans his feathers.
He always cleans his feathers. True. Always cleaning his feathers.
He's a good hippogriff.
I told him he was a good hippogriff. But Creature...
It's the potter boy's head in the fire. What's he come for, Creature wonders?
Where's Sirius, Creature?
Master has gone, Harry Potter.
Where's he gone? Where's he gone, Creature? Okay, I can't keep character when you're gonna laugh like that. Harry, I'm warning you. What about Lupin, Mad-Eye, any of them? Are any of them here?
Nobody here but Creature. Creature thinks he will have a little chat with his mistress now. Yes, he hasn't had a chance in a long time. Creature's master has been keeping him away from her.
Where has Sirius gone? Creature, has he gone to the Department of Mysteries?
Master does not tell Creature where he's going.
But you know, don't you? You know where he is.
Master will not come back from the Department of Mysteries. Creature and his mistress are alone again.
Oh, it's so creepy.
Yes, it is.
Really is, creepy. Especially when he lets out his loudest cackle yet. Oh, yeah, it's awful to see how he is here. He's just so, like, taken in by the dark side.
Yes, it's really, and I mean, I love the arc of Creature. I think it's really interesting to see, like, you know, his psyche when we get it into the seventh book. He's a really fascinating character, in my opinion. So, Creature here, he's so disturbing, but I really do like that he has a redemption arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely, at this point, does not seem redeemable at all.
No.
So, it's interesting that he is able to be slightly redeemed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Harry obviously is thinking the worst, but at this moment, Umbridge comes. I mean, this is really just the epitome of just, like, awful timing. And just, it's just so, like, you're just so floored with just fear when you're reading this.
Yeah, it says that with a horrible abruptness, he's all of a sudden staring at the face of Umbridge, the wide, pallid face of her. And she's bending his neck back as far as it will go, as though she's gonna slit his throat. It's pretty terrifying.
I would not put that past her.
Definitely not.
And she's being, like, the evil villain, like, revealing what she's done.
Yeah, doing the monologue here.
I had stealth censoring spells placed all around my doorway the last time, after the last one got in, you foolish boy.
The last Niffler, yeah.
Yeah. So she's, like, revealing everything that she's done.
Right.
But yeah, Harry, his first lie is that he was trying to get his firebolt.
Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it was fairly quick thinking, but why would he be getting his firebolt out of the fire?
Yeah, she's like, liar, your firebolt is under strict guard in the dungeons, as you very well know, Potter. You had your head in my fire. With whom have you been communicating?
Harry, then he's like, oh, he tries to lie. He's like, no one. And he looks around, and he can see Hermione is pinned up against the wall by Millicent Bulstrode. That's cute.
Yeah, really kind of hot. Millicent Bulstrode pinned Hermione to the wall.
Yeah, I guess so. And for some people. I would not say
I'm not one of them, but...
Yeah, Millicent Bulstrode, and she's finally getting her revenge for when Hermione tried to impersonate her.
Yeah, true.
Although Hermione...
Hermione kind of already got her karma for that.
Yeah, exactly. So then... it says that Malfoy is leaning on the windowsill, and then he's smirking because he takes Harry's wand and he's throwing it in the air one-handed and catching it.
Really cool. It's
such a tool.
Right.
But then a bunch of large Slytherins, including Crabbe is one of them, bring in Ron, Ginny, Luna, and then Neville, who is now going to be the last one to join the six of them.
Right. He was brought along because he tried to... stop Warrington from taking Ginny. Oh, Neville, not the time to be chivalrous.
Yeah. It's kind of like just how Neville is. Like, he just gets brought into things.
No, don't take her! Yeah, totally.
But I mean, it's very sweet that he stood up for Ginny.
Yeah, and he doesn't really need standing up for, but yes, I agree.
When Umbridge sees Ginny, she goes, good, good. Well, it looks as though Hogwarts will shortly be a Weasley-free zone, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good burn, actually.
I know. Cracks me up, the Weasley-free zone.
Yes.
And Malfoy finds that quite funny as well.
Right, he laughs loudly, sycophantically.
Yeah. And then she starts...
I love when she calls Ron a buffoon next. She says, you sent this buffoon to tell me the poltergeist was wreaking havoc in the Transfiguration Department. Malfoy loves that, too.
Unfortunately, she knew where Peeves was because he had just been smearing ink on the eyepieces of the school telescopes.
Right.
So she... Actually, if Ron hadn't said that, she might have actually gone up to the astronomy tower. I mean...
Right.
She then was alerted by the sneaking spell or whatever.
Right.
So, or a secrecy sensor. So, anyway, then she starts asking him, trying to question Harry and find out who he was talking to, and she has a couple of different theories.
It's pretty interesting that she doesn't guess Sirius, because she, like, knew that that was who Harry had been trying to communicate with the other two times, or, like, I guess the one time where she had her hand in the fire, and then
right.
She, like, questioned him about it with the Veritas Serum. So it's interesting that her three theories are Dumbledore, Hagrid, and McGonagall, those are okay theories, but why wouldn't you guess Sirius when you know that Harry's communicated with him in this exact same way before?
Yeah, true. When she guesses McGonagall, she says, I hear she is too ill to talk to anyone, and then Malfoy and the other members of the Inquisitorial Squad laugh at that.
Yeah, horrible! Shame on you.
Yeah, exactly. And Harry is so filled with rage that he's shaking. And yeah, I can see why. It's a pretty horrible moment. So then she starts saying, like, I've offered you the chance to talk freely, so I have no alternative but to force you. Draco, fetch Professor Snape.
Right, and this is a really interesting moment in the chapter, because it's when Harry realized, like, whoops. I forgot that there actually is another member of the Order left at Hogwarts.
Whoops.
Whoops.
Looks like that's another zero for you,
another
Harry.
Zero then, Harry. Another zero then, Potter. Whoops. But yeah, it's just a really interesting moment because it's like he had been so stupid. Like, he thought that all the Order members were gone, but there still is one, and that's Snape.
Yeah, and this is kind of like, you know, symbolic of the larger story of Snape. Like, Snape's memories come into play at the last minute when it almost seems like there's not going to be anyone else in the Order to help Harry.
Yes.
Then Snape is the final straw, or the final piece of the puzzle, I guess. But yeah, in this moment, he's forgotten about Snape. And, I mean, you can see why, and it's because Snape never acts like an Order member.
Right. And, I mean, and this scene is kind of infuriating. It's more infuriating, actually, like, to read it from Snape's perspective a little bit, or to, like, it's always annoyed me how Harry immediately believes Snape is doing the worst here, because, like, he does his, well, we're jumping ahead a little bit, we can get back to the Veritaserum stuff, but when Harry says, like, he's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden, Snape just reacts like, I've got no idea what he's saying. And of course he has to do that. Like, he can't say, aha, like, we'll go look into that right now, Harry, my best friend.
I just wish they had, like, some sort of code word or something, because I can totally see why Harry doesn't believe Snape. And it's not, like, if McGonagall had done this, mm-hmm. he probably would have thought, okay, she probably knows she's just faking it in front of Umbridge, but it's Snape. And the fact is, he's always questioning Snape's motives, and Snape's such a jerk. Like, he even says, like, if you would like to poison Potter, it's a great idea, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
So I can see why Harry doesn't know. Like, he can't read Snape, and he's...
That's true.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the Veritaserum stuff. Yeah, Umbridge requests that she would like some Veritaserum, and, Snape's like, you used my last bottle to interrogate Potter. Surely you did not use it all. I told you that 3 drops would be sufficient.
Yeah, which obviously she did use it all.
And then she's like, well, you can make some more, can't you? And he's like, well...
Certainly, it takes a full moon cycle to mature, so I should have it ready for you in about a month.
And I always wonder, like, if that's really true of Veritaserum.
It's probably true. It seems like a complicated potion kind of thing.
But here's the thing. I bet Snape normally always has some on hand, so, like, if he's getting close to running out, he makes another batch. But here, like, I wonder if this was his little piece of the resistance. Of
yeah.
Knowing, like, okay, I'm just not going to make any, so then I won't have any to give her.
Right. Or maybe he does have some and he's just lying about it. But probably more likely that he's just, like, doesn't actually have it. But yeah, I wish to interrogate him. I wish you to provide me with a potion that will force him to tell me the truth. And Snape, yeah, unless you wish to poison Potter, and I must assure you I would have the greatest sympathy with you if you did. I cannot help you.
Yeah. So, and Harry then is trying to use Occlumency/Legilimency he's hoping that Snape will use Legilimency on him to convey this message of Voldemort being... having Sirius at the Department of Mysteries, and
mm-hmm.
I think his problem here is he's thinking that the mind is like a book to be opened and read.
The mind is not a book,
and like he should be kind of like, I don't know, maybe he should be trying to picture the vision or something. Like, maybe that would make it more.
You know, I think this is fine the way he's doing it. Yeah, as long as it's a front of mind, you know, like that. I don't know. But I do think it's interesting here that Umbridge places Snape on probation here, and which makes him raise his eyebrows, but he's still being kind of sassy. He gives her an ironic bow when he leaves, which is pretty funny.
And then Harry shouts out the line that you referenced earlier. He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden. Harry, if you wanted Snape to get the message, you really should have called him Snuffle.
Yeah, that's very true.
No
that's
wonder Snape didn't prefers. Know what he was talking about.
Very good point.
Yeah, so then Snape, he just has a totally blank look on his face. And he says, I have no idea. Potter, when I want nonsense shouted at me, I shall give you a babbling beverage.
Yeah, and I love it. He says, and Crab, loosen your hold a little. If Longbottom suffocates, it will mean a lot of tedious paperwork. And I am afraid I shall have to mention it on your reference if you ever apply for a job.
Yeah, Snape is pretty funny here.
Yes,
but
he is.
I've always been frustrated that he didn't have some way that he could have hinted to Harry that he was acting on it. Because I feel like Harry just then immediately, like you said, Harry immediately dismisses that as, like, being at all useful to him.
Right. But, like, okay, I see the value in having, like, a code word in place already, but, like, what was Snape gonna do that wasn't gonna give it away to Umbridge, too, and to Malfoy? Like,
Malfoy can't know that Harry and Snape are on the same side.
No, I know. And part of it is, what it really boils down to is the fact that Snape has already totally ruined his chance of having a healthy relationship with Harry.
Right, that's totally it.
Like, he totally has burned all level of trust with Harry, even though he's saved his life in the past and that kind of thing, but there was no chance that he was going to be able to reassure Harry in this scene.
Yeah, I think that's totally right.
Yeah, so, I mean, even if, like, let's say Harry had gone to Snape before he tried to go to Umbridge's office, like, Snape probably would have said something really vague, or he probably would have, like, they would have left and Harry would have
been like, get out of my office, Potter.
And Harry would have been, like, convinced that Snape was, like, gonna be acting on Voldemort's side or something, so.
That's probably true.
Yeah. So, I just don't think Harry was ever going to trust Snape.
No.
So, anyway, then Snape leaves, and Umbridge starts sinking even lower, if you can believe that.
Yes.
She's like, you're forcing me. I do not want to, but sometimes circumstances justify the use. I'm sure the minister will understand that I had no choice.
Pretty creepy. Malfoy's looking at her with a hungry expression on his face.
Yeah, that's gross.
The Cruciatus curse ought to loosen your tongue.
Yeah, and it is very, like, okay, the creepy part is that the minister probably would believe her, like, would allow her to do that.
Yes.
Like, that's the that's even more disturbing, is just the fact that, like, these are the lengths that she's able to go to now.
Right.
So, this is when Hermione then starts her great charade here. She starts shrieking out, no, Professor Umbridge, it's illegal!
Yes.
And, I mean, I'm sure she is partially not acting, because it is
I
illegal.
Think at this point she's actually just, like, yelling, and she doesn't have the plan yet. She's, like, coming up with it as she's yelling out, like, stop, stop, don't do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of think she's been coming up with a plan ever since Umbridge said, who were you trying to communicate with? Dumbledore?
That's probably true, yeah.
I feel like that's what first made Hermione think, that's okay, we're going to pretend like we were trying to contact Dumbledore.
Yeah, that's probably right.
So, but anyway, this is partially probably not acting, because it is pretty horrifying that she wants to use the Cruciatus curse. And Umbridge, it says that she has a nasty, eager, excited look on her face that Harry had never seen before.
Extremely disturbing.
And then she says, what Cornelius doesn't know won't hurt him.
Yeah. He never knew I ordered Dementors after Potter last summer, but he was delighted to be given the chance to expel him all the same.
Pretty good reveal here.
Yeah, another
evil villain monologue, uh-huh, yes.
Totally. So then Harry gasps, it was you? You sent the Dementors after me?
Somebody had to act. They were all bleeding about silencing you somehow. Discrediting you, but I was the one who actually did something about it.
Only you wriggled out of that one, didn't you, Potter? And then she starts to scream out Crucio, but Hermione then breaks in.
No! No, Harry, we'll have to tell her.
And Hermione's like, no way, and says,
Harry says that.
He's just staring at her, and there's a little bit of a back and forth. Hermione's crying weakly, and
I've always kind of been annoyed. Ginny was staring at Hermione as though she had never seen her before. Okay, Ginny, maybe just like...
She's like, how dare you betray us?
She's like, what the... Like, I thought you were our friend.
I've never seen this horrible side of you, Hermione.
I didn't know you were this weak person. But Harry does notice, though Hermione was sobbing desperately into her hands, there was no trace of a tear.
Yeah, and that's our first sign that Hermione has a different plan in mind.
Right.
But she is very convincing here. She does a great job. She's just, like, sobbing, and she doesn't want to tell. But, I mean, it makes way more sense than if Harry had just said, oh, I was trying to talk to Dumbledore.
Right,
just admitted
yes.
it. So this is much more believable. He says that he was trying to speak to Dumbledore. Now, luckily, these other five... buffoons don't mess it up, because they all kind of freeze when she says that.
Yes, like, okay, let her keep going, guys. Don't, like, give it away that this is a surprise to all of you.
Yeah. So, anyway, then Umbridge is like, you know where he is? And Hermione's like,
do you know where he is?
That's what Umbridge says.
Hermione, well, no. We tried the leaky cauldron in Diagon Alley and the three broomsticks and even the hogshead.
Idiot girl, Dumbledore won't be sitting in a pub when the whole ministry's looking for him.
It does make her seem really dumb. Like,
and I love that.
I'm thinking the image of Dumbledore sitting in a pub.
We tried the three broomsticks. So no like wonder she calls it, find him there.
I like how she calls it the leaky cauldron in Diagon Alley.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we know where the leaky cauldron is.
There's only like three bars in the whole wizarding world.
Clearly,
so.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so then...
We even tried the Hogshead. Oh, Hermione, you've got a lot to learn.
You know, the Hogshead would actually be the worst place for Dumbledore to be. When, in fact, it probably would have been good, because maybe he is at the Hogshead.
Yeah, hanging, he actually could be, like, hanging out in that weird back... Yeah, that, like, cellar that Aberforth has.
Yeah. So, then...
But we wanted to tell him it's ready.
And she's like... What's ready?
What's ready, girl?
Like, she doesn't, like, seem to know her name. Or...
I know, she's being so, like, drunk with power here.
Yeah. The weapon. Umbridge. Weapon? Weapon? You have been developing some method of resistance? A weapon you could use against the Ministry? On Professor Dumbledore's orders, of course.
Yes, but he had to leave before it was finished, and now we finished it for him, and we can't find him to tell him.
Such a pathetic idea, but it's like...
What kind of weapon is it?
We don't really understand it. We just did what Professor Dumbledore told us to do.
It's just amazing because, like, Hermione does such a good job. It's,
yes, she
it's
does.
Similar to what Dumbledore does when he concocts his whole story about how...
Yes. In the Centaur and the Sneak.
Yeah, he summoned all the students together to be on his army.
Yes.
And, like, it's just playing on these fears that the Ministry has that are so irrational
that,
like, you can't even reason with it at all.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's an amazing cover story here. The fact is, like, it's actually a super unbelievable story.
Yes, it definitely is.
These people, like, she's just so irrational. Yeah. This is exactly what she's been paranoid about the whole time.
Exactly, yeah.
So then she's like, lead me to the weapon.
Yeah. And Hermione, she's good at this because she says, I'm not showing them. And Umbridge, it's not for you to set conditions.
Fine. Let them see it. I hope they use it on you. In fact, I wish you'd invite loads and loads of people to come and see. That would serve you right. Oh, I'd love it if the whole school knew where it was and how to use it. And then if you annoy any of them, they'll be able to sort you out.
And again, it's like, it makes, like, no sense.
Like, no, it really seriously makes zero sense.
And as if, like, the Inquisitorial Squad is just gonna turn on Umbridge and stuff. Like, but at the same time, like, again, she's just so paranoid that, like, these are the kinds of fears that she plays right into.
Right, and Umbridge, all right, dear, let's make it just you and me, and we'll take Potter, too, shall we? Yeah, it's, like, exactly what Hermione wants. She's so good at this.
Yeah. I mean, she probably ideally would have wanted the other four to come with them as well, but that was definitely not going to happen.
Professor Umbridge, I think some of the squad should come with you to look after...
The squad, yeah.
I'm a fully trained Ministry official, Malfoy. You really think I cannot manage two wandless teenagers alone?
Well, it kind of doesn't work out
It doesn't work out great for you.
Yeah. So... Anyway, then she says that they're going to be guarding the other four to make sure that they don't escape.
They don't know that Brittany's got a bat bogey hex up her sleeve.
Very true. And then Umbridge tells them that they can lead. They can lead the way.
That's right.
And that's the end of the chapter. Again, like I said, huge cliffhanger again. Imagine if we were reading this for the first time. I don't think we'd be able to keep up the one... chapter a week pace.
Definitely not. This chapter was great. I definitely want to rank it pretty high. What about you?
I do too. I think the emotion was running so high. Emotions were running so high, like, it was just really thrilling, and I don't know, I almost want to put it in first place.
I think it's in first place. Centaur on the Sneak is our number one right now, and I think I would compare the two chapters for sure. They're pretty similar, like, feeling.
The
stakes are higher in this one.
Right, they are higher. And this idea, though, I like that, as seeing these two chapters as pretty parallel, because we've got the capture by, like, the Ministry or Umbridge, and then they're, you know, they come up with this cover story and somehow weasel their way out of a situation where it did not look likely to get out of.
Yeah. You know, it's actually interesting. I don't think the stakes actually aren't higher here, except for, Umbridge does threaten Harry with the Cruciatus Curse, so that is high stakes, but, like, they stood, the Centaur on the Sneak, they stand to lose Dumbledore. Here they stand to lose,
Yeah, honestly, it would have been better if they would have stayed in the office.
Then nothing would have happened to Sirius, because Sirius wasn't in the Department of Mysteries.
Yeah, I mean, the stakes feel higher, let's put it that way. Yeah, so I think so. I think chapter one, or spot number one, is good for this one.
Yeah, it's very exciting. We'll see if it stays there for much longer. I kind of feel like it won't, but we'll see.
All right, so we've got it ranked in number one. What about Real Weirdo, though?
That's a hard one. I feel like Hermione's plan is good at the end, so, like, we could reward her for that. But it's also, I don't know. And she's the voice of reason in this chapter, so maybe that's the easy way out for giving her.
I think Hermione makes sense, just because, like, seriously, she's very fast thinker, and she really, like you said, she tried to reason with Harry, but then she really shows her true colors in how, like, on board she is with helping Harry.
That's true.
Even though it's something that she wasn't necessarily jazzed about doing, you know, the idea of hunting down Sirius, like, that wasn't something she wanted to do, but she did it because she knew she, like, had to support Harry.
That's true. I mean, I know we give it to Hermione kind of a lot, but I do think she deserves it in this chapter.
She definitely does.
This is her third time this book, I believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, she is a queen in training, so.
She is. QIT.
Yeah.
And a QT pie.
The QIT and the QT pie.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, all right, well, congratulations, Hermione, you've earned it. I mean, really, that fast thinking, even though, like we said, it actually would have been better if she hadn't come up with that, but...
She saves Harry from being attacked with the Christianus curse, so good on her.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, that does bring us to the end of our chapter discussion here today. And just as a reminder, you can always find those lists, the rankings, and the Real Weirdos on our website, which is realweirdsisters.com. When you're on there, you can also leave comments or feedback, whatever you'd like, and we're happy to interact with you there. And as usual, make sure that you are subscribed to us on social media at Facebook, facebook.com/realweirdsisters. Give us a like on there. Or follow us on Twitter at realweirdsister. And we, you know, a lot of times we'll share wizarding news or we'll interact with our fans on there. So if you haven't done so already, that's a great way to support us. And then, of course, if you haven't done so already, we'd love it if you would check out our Patreon page, which can be found at patreon.com/realweirdsisters. On there, you can see the different levels that you can support us at. So far, we have developed a really great community of patrons, and it's a really fun way to just get involved with the podcast more. We interact with our patrons a lot, and so if you feel like you really want that inside, you want to have our ear on that inside level.
Exactly.
That's probably the best way to do that, because we have that Facebook group and it's just a really great way to all interact together.
Yeah, and we also release an extra show per month for patrons only. We just recently released our September patron cast, so if you pledge today, you'll get access to all of those past episodes. I think we're at like 15 or 16 now, so.
Yeah, and you know, we get a lot of people tweeting us, oh, I just caught up. Well, have you caught up on the patron cast?
That's right, that's a good point.
So, I mean, this, if you've just recently caught up on our show, this is a way that you'll get a whole bunch of extra content.
A whole
that's
just new level of
waiting
Alice and
Martha. There for you, and it's kind of different, but it's fun. So, it's some Harry Potter stuff, some personal stuff, and
a lot of personal stuff.
Yeah, you make it, I think, sound a little more intriguing than it really is, but yeah, you'll just have to listen to find out. Okay, and then if you would like to support us in another way that is always helpful is to review and rate us on iTunes. Leave that 5-star rating and then write a review to go with it. So this one comes to us from BM Davis 2, and this review is titled Weirdly Great. I fell in love with the HP books in fourth grade. Good old 1999.
Same age as you, Alice.
Me too, yeah. I spent the next 9 or so years reading the books over and over, devouring new books within days of release, going to midnight movie releases, the works. However, for the first 10 years of my adult life, my HP obsession has been dormant. Until I found this podcast, I'm back in full swing, thanks in part to Martha and Alice. I mean, how could I find something new in the books that I'd read so many times that they're literally falling apart? I'll tell you how. In-depth and comical chapter discussions. At first, I wasn't sold on the podcast, but by the end of the first chapter episode of the first book, I was in. You guys make me chuckle sensibly and or snort with amusement. I love the 3rd and 6th movies, though.
Boo!
And Gambin is fave Dumby.
Boo!
Boo! Okay, I'm sorry, I'll be respectful. though even I admit he is way too keyed up in the fourth movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm binging my way through through book three with you guys right now. Looking forward to the rest. Smiley. And a little heart. Brie. P.S. Ravenclaw. P.P.S. Percy should have been a Slytherin. Till the end of book seven, anyway.
Well, that kind of contradicts yourself there, Brie. Because if he changes his colors at the end of book seven, then maybe the Sorting Hat knew all along what he really was.
Well, anyway, thank you for that really nice review.
Yes, thank you, Brie.
We're just teasing. You're welcome to have your own opinions.
Of course. We welcome all opinions on this podcast.
Up to the part where you started talking about the third and sixth movies, I was like, she is just describing my entire life here.
Right, very true.
Yeah, so anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for that amazing review. And, you know, we look forward to reading other people's reviews on the show. So make sure you do that if you haven't already.
And also make sure that you are subscribed, because this coming week we do have an episode that will be released later in the week. So we're not going to spoil what it is, but I do have to say October 3rd is coming.
October 3rd is coming fast.
What day is it?
It's October 3rd.
Yeah, so that's a little hint of what your episode that's coming later in the
week
is.
Kind of a huge spoiler, but okay.
I don't know, maybe not.
All right, well, but aside from our special topics show that's coming out this week, we will also be back on Monday to talk about Chapter 33, Fight and Flight.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.